Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz hanging out with you today, and you know, it's quite the crazy market. You know, we talked a little bit yesterday with Scott and what he thinks, and of course, we all kind of think along the same lines that eventually the markets have to straighten themselves out into a form of reality. Instead of the manipulated markets that we are seeing right now. And, you know, it's the whole society is just a bunch of manipulation. And, you know, we haven't talked much about, you know, politics and what goes on here. But, you know, no matter what side of the aisle that you happen to reside on, I think one thing we can all agree on is that government is too big. I think we can all agree that the spending, the reckless spending, I would almost say, that they do is ridiculous. I would think that we would all agree that a smaller government would be better. And I think the original framers of the Constitution would roll over if they have seen what we have done to our economy and to our government since. You know, when you look at the overall big picture, and you see, because really, are our politicians really there for our best interest, or are they just puppets that strings are being pulled by big corporate America? Now, you know, if we look at it and we go, okay, well, Warren Buffett, okay, he gives basically equally to both parties, so he's not choosing a side. What is Warren Buffett donating for? Because he's donating for his own personal bank book. We can listen to his crap all day long about how he spends it. Now, again, I'm not taking anything away from the brains of who he is and how smart he is, because you cannot take away what he has done. He has become a billionaire from investing and doing things like that and being smarter than other guys in the room. But I do find it irritating, annoying, at some of the things he does say. And he talks about, you know, paying more taxes. And I always said, you know, Mr. Buffett, if you want to pay more taxes, please write a check. Don't involve me in your nonsense. Don't tell me how your secretary pays more in percentage than you do. I don't really care. Okay. What I do care about is the way that the government is run and the loopholes that have been made by big corporate America. And, you know, we go back to Buffett for a minute. You know, we talk about the inversion of companies moving out to save on taxes. And of course, Warren Buffett was way against it. Of course, what did he do 2 weeks later? He bought a company in Canada so he could do the same thing. So he kind of talks a little bit of out of both sides of his mouth. But it's not really him that I blame for it. I blame the people who run the show or the puppeteers, which are big oil and big corporate. I mean, face it, when you're spending billions on a campaign, billions, you know, it's a problem. Because why are people spending billions? Why do guys like Buffett and the like give equally to both parties? Well, because they want to be respected on both sides. So when they need something, they can get it done. Okay. Why is it that we have not, you know, gone in deeper into, you know, researching other than fossil fuels? Now, I'm not, you know, I'm advocate of oil, but, you know, if you look at it from that side, You know, well, who's running the show? You know, Big Tobacco. You know, who's running the show? You know, we have bits and pieces of legislation that's approved, but the big donors, the big money, never seems to get paralyzed by what's going on. So you have to wonder, you have to kind of scratch your head and say, isn't there a better way? Wouldn't it make more sense to run the United States of America as a company? And wouldn't it make sense, instead of electing a president, and, you know, we obviously know my opinions of the current guy in office, and they ain't good. Okay, I don't like him. I don't respect him. He's smart. He's a book smart guy. I cannot take away his intelligence. But I certainly don't have to agree with the way that he operates things. And I hate people that come out and tell me how good they are for me when they have not given me one bit of benefit, let alone what he's telling me that he's done for me. But when you look at it and you go, okay, how do we make it better? Well, wouldn't it make sense to have a one-term president and make the term a little bit longer? I mean, if you look at it now, the incumbent, whoever it is, spends the first 2 years of his office trying to get elected to the next four. Okay, we're talking about money. We're talking about things that don't get done because of that. I think that you have to look and you have to say, wait a second, maybe it'd be better if we said, okay, 1 6-year term, how much money would that save? Okay, how much time would it save? How much better could we be? How much better could the country be when we had one guy in control for 6 years, knowing that he's not coming back, so he doesn't have to spend his time trying to win that election to get back? Doesn't that make more sense? Doesn't it make sense to start, you know, letting the congressmen and the senators start to earn their money? Okay? I mean, you know, we can talk about how hard they work. They make a lot of money. And the biggest kicker is the pension that they get afterwards. But you don't think, you know, I often ask the question, because you watch some of these guys spend $40 million of their own money to get elected to a $200,000 a year job with a $200,000 a year pension. Does that make a lot of sense? To me, it certainly doesn't logically make sense to me. I find that, you know, somewhat upsetting, because, you know, you have to ask yourself, why would somebody do that? Do they want to help the country that much? Or are they just looking because there's a lot of, they used to call it, in the old days, they used to call it graft. But is there a lot of graft going on, or are there hidden benefits for being in office? Okay. And I would have to say, most likely, there are some hidden benefits that still have not been outlawed for a reason for a guy to want to go into office. I know there's a lot of shady and shaky stuff that goes on with the campaign money, with the coffers. So, you know, I find it to be a problem. I think there's a lot more things that are problematic, and we'll talk about them on another show. But to me, I think it has to be something that we have to do something about it. We, the American people, need to take control of our own lives and say, you know what? It's time. It's time to take to change. You know, we heard that word change, but he didn't change anything. In fact, he made it worse. But we do have to affect change if we, the people, want to make things better. And that's my public service announcement for today. Anyways, this is the Bubba Show. Make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim, built by traders for traders. But really, I want you to check out thebubbashow.org. We are making some great changes, and we've got a lot of great things that go along with our new Bubba Report. Make sure you check out the Bubba Report as well. But in the meantime, this is Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. I'm going to step out of a break, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And as I did my public service announcement in segment one, I'm going to bring in Bill Whittle. I think he's got some great things to say, and I want you to go ahead and check out what Bill's got to say. So here's Bill Whittle here right on The Bubba Show.
Well, we rather quietly passed a milestone. It was a big one. Because for the first time since the 1870s, that would be during the administration of President Ulysses S. Grant, the United States is no longer the world's largest economy. Hold on to your hats, America, reports Brett Ahrens of MarketWatch in his online article, and throw away that big fat styrofoam finger while you're at it. Now look, I don't know anything about Brett Ahrens' politics, but throwing away that big fat styrofoam finger, the red, white, and blue one that says we're number one, well, that's a long-held wish of the progressive left. It's so gauche, you see, it's so unspeakably vulgar, this Philistine business of having pride in yourself. This news about us taking second place economically to China is not a bug for the left, it's a feature. They hate this country. Collectivists like our president, let's say, have always hated capitalism, always hated individuality, always hated the idea that more work leads to more rewards. In other words, always hated everything that America has traditionally stood for. You don't believe me? Just before he was elected, Barack Obama famously bragged that he and the progressive movement would fundamentally transform the United States of America. Is that something you'd want to do to something or someone you love, fundamentally transform it? Would that be the first promise you made to a new bride you claim to adore? Would it be that you can't wait to just fundamentally transform her? Progressives are happy we fall into second. It reduces global inequality. They'll be happier yet when we fall into third or 10th or 20th, the way our education system did when they got their hands on that. Now, China, needless to say, has a little more than four times the population of the United States, so surely we should be satisfied with that, right? That one quarter of China's population, America, produces just slightly less than they do? No. Damn it, no. We should not be satisfied. First place is not a statistic. First place is an attitude. First place is an identity. First place is destiny. And the instant you become willing to come in second in anything you care about, you're going to find that second place is a sliding slope to nowhere, and that's not where you're going to remain second. That China is growing at an incredible pace is self-evident. Now, a lot of that is not something we can do anything about, but a lot of it is something we can do something about, but we won't. A significant portion of China's tech industry is, how should I put this delicately, stolen from Western research and development. We don't retaliate because, you know, we can't add. Our deficit spending makes us their economic slaves. And another significant portion, everything from pirated movie discs to Adidas running shoes to Oreos cookies to Arm & Hatchet baking soda, well, they're just flagrant theft. And that's worth trillions, too. But look, put all of that aside. That's just bitching about a bad call or two or three or a million. The reason that China has surpassed the U.S. economically is pretty simple, really. The socialist Chinese leadership has kept the dictatorial essence of socialism while allowing the Chinese people to embrace a capitalist ethic of hard work and reward for effort. Now, meanwhile, on the other side of the ocean, the American progressives are trying and succeeding in foisting laziness, envy, irresponsibility, government dependency, and sloth, in other words, socialism, on the American people. Record numbers of Americans are on food stamps or unemployment or other forms of taxpayer support, in other words, government-forced redistribution of income, at the cost to the country's long-term growth and prosperity. But it's much worse than that. The progressive left has throttled what might have been the most booming economic recovery in American history these last 6 years through irresponsible fiscal policy, higher taxes, and absurd regulations, mostly regulations advocated by environmental hysterics. And none of them make the slightest lick of sense while doing everything he can to prevent America from cleanly burning the plentiful, inexpensive fossil fuels right beneath our feet. President Obama then turns and sells that coal and oil to China, where it's burned, and not very cleanly, in the same atmosphere we inhabit, to the benefit of the Chinese. My friends, world-dominant militaries depend on world-dominant economies. World-dominant research and innovation depends on the incentive of financial reward, and freedom from ridiculous levels of regulation. When guys like Steve Jobs, the founder of the most cash-rich company in the world, says that he could never start Apple in America today, that's not because we've run out of garages or capital or people willing to risk that capital. Virtually all of the great ideas still come from right here in America. But the progressive left, which is significantly too stupid and infinitely too lazy to go out and make their own wealth, taxes and regulates new startups to death to feed a government that costs about $4,000 billion every single year. When you realize that, you begin to realize that these shackles are self-imposed, and you begin to realize what we could do if we just release ourselves from these self-imposed chains. It wouldn't just astonish the Chinese or the rest of the world. It would astonish us ourselves.
And, you know, again, we talk about these things on a regular basis. And, you know, you got to think about it, right? Are we happy being second? Are you really happy? Are you happy with the leadership? Are you happy with what goes on? And again, it doesn't have to be Obama, okay? I mean, it doesn't have to be anybody in particular. But, you know, we the people, I think that is in the Constitution. I think it's time we take control of our country. I think it's time we take control of our own right. And I think that is what bothers me most of all, is that we sit back too much and we don't go out and try to affect change. And I think that's where you have to get the idea. You know, you have to want it. You have to work it. You can't sit back and say it's okay. Now, you know, there's been, you know, fear tactic after fear tactic, but what Bill is saying is real. Okay. And that isn't somebody trying to market to you to sell you a product. This is somebody who's saying, you know, it's not okay being number two. I mean, somebody's got to be number two, but with who we are and where we've been and what we've done, there's no reason for it. And that, to me, is a sad state of an oversized government that doesn't take the interest of the majority. We still have and are still taking care of the minority. Okay? And in this country, we have two minorities, the rich and the poor, the middle class, who really have control over their own destiny, should they choose to take it, are being too passive. Okay? This is where we have to take charge and say enough. Because isn't it enough? Aren't you just fed up with second best? Are you not fed up with hearing the leader of our nation tell you how good things are when you know that they're not? Are you happy that we're in the middle of a deflation? Are you happy that the jobs market sucks? Are you happy that they didn't choose to use the money from the Fed in a better way? If you're happy with that, then you're probably happy. But if you're not, then you have to do something about it. And sitting around hoping that it changes is not it. It means we need to step out and take care of our business and be the nation that we are. We are built on a nation of entrepreneurs. We are built on capitalists. We're built on people who want to take charge and say, screw this, I want better. And we're entitled to better. But the only way you get better is you got to work at it. You got to affect your own change. Okay? So, anyways, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And we're trying to make things better with our new Bubba report. We're trying to bring you better information that is not put out driven to drive you to fear to buy a product, but to give you real, honest to goodness, personal opinion from guys like the Badger, Keith Bliss, Scott Shalady, Mike Brown, Anthem Blanchard, all different walks of life, but we want you to have a full education. Anyways, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop by here for a break, and we'll be right back. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
You're so delicious. You're so, so.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Shalady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you, and I have another conversation with Bill Whittle on his firewall and what's going on now in the terrorists. And I think that, of course, you know, we love listening and want to make sure that we educate everybody. So let's get back to Bill Whittle and what he's got to say. Here we go.
13 years old. The 1972 Munich Olympics were coming to an end, and I'd been fascinated by American swimmer Mark Spitz and his seven gold medals, and had a big crush for some reason on Russian gymnast Olga Korbut. You know, you're still a boy at 13, or I was anyway, and when the first reports came in that Israeli athletes had been taken hostage by a Palestinian group called Black September, I remember clearly having what seemed like a very adult idea at the time, namely, that I thought that the entire idea of the Olympics was based on the ancient idea of a truce, that enemies could take 2 weeks off and come together and compete at sports instead of hacking each other to death. It seemed a good idea, a good and honorable thing to do. Who breaks a truce held under a burning flame? Wasn't that the entire purpose of lighting and then extinguishing the flame? That was the duration of the ceasefire? Wasn't the burning fire symbolic of sanctuary from violence, if only for a few days? Well, apparently not. Because on September 5th, 1972, Palestinian terrorists broke into the Israeli compound at the Olympic Village in Munich. Now, I didn't know too much about Israelis either, but to tell the truth, I was learning pretty fast. Two members of the Israeli team were killed near the dormitories, but we soon discovered that wrestling coach Moshe Weinberg and weightlifter Yosef Romano fought back with teeth, fists, and a fruit knife, slashing, wounding, and knocking unconscious several of their murderers before being shot to death at point-blank range. The Palestinians then took nine hostages, nine athletes, visiting under the flames of truce, a land where so many of their relatives had been murdered just a generation before. Then, on TV, Jim McKay said this.
Nine were killed at the airport tonight. They're all gone.
No, they'd all been killed. Machine-gunned in their helicopters, bound with the ropes they'd tried to chew through, murdered with grenades, and then joining the flames and the other flames past and present as their bodies burned in the helicopters. Now, it wasn't just me. That's how millions of Americans first heard the word Palestinian, through terror. And we remember how, when the dust clouds of the World Trade Center were still in the skies over lower Manhattan, the Palestinians cheered the terrorist murder of 3,000 innocent people. And we saw again just a few weeks ago how five Israeli rabbis were hacked to death with axes as they knelt in prayer by two Palestinian savages who left the synagogue ankle deep in blood and gore. It never ends. Never ends because the Palestinians are a terrorist nation. It's who they are, and it's what they do. It was a decision they made back then, and they continue to make it every single day. They murder people. You know, in the days after the Munich massacre, indeed, even in the days after the 9/11 massacre, it would have seemed inconceivable to learn that a group espousing not only these tactics, but also the daily intimidation and terrorization of American Jews existed on a single college campus, let alone most of them. But nothing shocks me today. Students for Justice in Palestine can be found at virtually every elite university in America today, and their tactics are the same wherever they go. They not only call for the destruction of the State of Israel, but bully and harass Jewish students until they lose sleep and start to fear for their safety. Now, certainly universities would never tolerate a group like Students for the Ku Klux Klan, making daily arguments in favor of a murderous design against African-American students, but Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, does that every day with Jewish students. Now, from the small Israeli flags with swastikas emblazoned on them or images of Jews targeting children and killing innocents, to the large, in other words, equating Israel with Hitler's Germany, SJP is by any definition a hate group. They routinely sponsor an event, for example, called Never Again for Anyone, co-equating Israel's treatment of the Palestinians with the Nazis' treatment of the Jews themselves. And all they're missing to make the comparison valid are, you know, a dozen death camps, some gas chambers, crematoria, and a few million actual dead bodies. Oh, and of course, the elimination of Arabs from the Knesset, stripping them of the only civil rights afforded to Arabs anywhere in the entire Middle East and all the rest. Now, just to cite one example among thousands, Daniel Greenfield took a look at SJP's Palestine Awareness Week at UCLA in February of 2011. It featured speakers such as Alison Weir, who'd used medieval Jewish blood libels, that's the myth that Jews use the blood of Christians in their religious rituals, as a basis for her attacks on the State of Israel. It featured Hatem Bazian, who had a long track record of anti-Semitism. SJP-UCLA was employing his tactics in its war on Jewish students. And then there was Amir Abdel Malik Ali. The Southern Poverty Law Center calls him a charismatic imam who promotes anti-Semitism, violence, and conspiracy theories. Ali has called for war against America and the Jews. Now, speaking to San Francisco State University students in 2009, Malik Ali recalled the campaign against Jews waged by him and the SJP co-founder. "Bring them out into the open," he said, "because they're like a night flower. There are certain flowers that blossom at night, but when the sun comes out, they go back in. That's the Zionist Jew. That's the Zionist Jew. At the nighttime, they come out, but once the sunshine comes out, once the light is put on them, they scatter." Malik Ali and SJP support the terror group Hamas, whose charter calls for Muslims to kill Jews and to kill every last one of them. So, how effective has the SJP hate campaign been? Well, the UCLA student government recently voted to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel. UCLA has sided with the terrorist nation, enthralled to a religion that treats women like cattle, murders homosexuals by hanging them with construction cranes, and murders not only athletes competing under ancient truce or people kneeling in prayer, but anyone speaking against or trying to leave their religion of peace. And look, all you really need to know about how effective SJP really is to watch the reaction of modern American students when one of them raises and waves the flag of ISIS, you know, beheaders of journalists and exterminators of entire communities of Jews, Christians, and Muslims alike, versus their reaction to the waving of the flag of the State of Israel, which, as I said, is the only outpost of liberalism, feminism, gay rights, legal protections, and rule of law in the entire region. A new genocide of the Jews is afoot, and as with the old genocide, the ground must first be prepared very carefully. And in this case, as with the last case, preparing that ground means dehumanizing the Jews, and now it means dehumanizing the Jewish state. Students in kafayas may not seem as intimidating as Nazi stormtroopers, but their message is the same, and so is their solution.
So, are we going to really sit back? And once again, this goes back to the theme of the day. Our leaders, do we really want to sit back and wait until the problem becomes worse? Or is it time to be who we are and be the aggressor here and you say, enough, it's time. Now, I was on Fox, a couple months ago, I guess it was, when the interview was coming out and we were getting threatened. And I said, and I'll say this now, that we should be the aggressor. You know, I understand where we are with war and things like that. But at some point, I believe that you need to take your country back. I believe we need to be the strong nation that we were and say, you know what? We are the boss. We are the ones that are in control. And we are number one. And until we get back to what our true identity should be, okay, yes, it does. There has to be, unfortunately, there has to be some blood spilled. And unfortunately, it will have to be some American blood as well. But at the end of the day, I believe that we need to take care of our business. We need to take care of our own. And we need to take care of this country. Because recently, this country has become under siege with a lot of things that are not very good. And I was one concerned that it can only get worse. And if you don't think the 9/11 was bad enough, and if you don't think it can happen again, think again. Because we are not dealing with rational human beings when it comes to this. We're not dealing with people that are worried about death. The only way you can deal with people like that is to put them to where they're not worried. We cannot continue to sit by and hope that it goes away, as we have done with the troubles in our economy and where we're hoping that it goes away. It is time for us to step up and be counted. That's the way I see it. I'm curious as to your opinion. I'd love to hear from all of you. And all you have to do is email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org. But I'm curious as to where you are. And everybody, look, at the nice thing about being in this country is you do have the freedom to say what's on your mind. And I would love to hear what's on your mind. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org. But you will see, if you check out thebubbashow.org, that we do cover a lot of these very topics. Because, again, we are Americans and have the right to speak our mind. So check it out. And also, things like this are covered in the Bubba Report, which is our new newsletter that will come to you monthly minimum, possibly more because of the way we're trying to set it up. We're playing with it right now. But for $99 a month, you can get the opinion of myself and many others that work with me. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, and we will be right back with more of The Bubba Show and more from Bill Whittle after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you, and I hope you're enjoying today's presentation. I hope you've got opinions of your own. And again, as I mentioned at the end of the last segment, I would love to hear what you have to say. I would love to have you involved. I would love to hear your opinions because I believe, again, in where I am and where I live. And I believe that's our choice. So I want to go back. And now we're going to go back to Mr. Bill Whittle and hear about the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Let's go back to Mr. Bill Whittle.
Well, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Sounds kind of hopeless, doesn't it? As if the good intentions create the road to hell? I think that that has the causality, good intentions leading to bad outcomes. I think it's got it completely backwards, and we're going to come back to that at the end, so don't you worry. So let's stay away from the emotional horror of the gulags and the death camps on the road to actual hell. And just to make a point, let's keep things manageable. Let's start by something small. Let's start by seeing how the path to heck is paved with good intentions. Now, one thing that pretty much everyone can agree on is that education is a good thing. Appropriate education, appropriate to what the individual hopes to do with their lives, is about mental, emotional, and spiritual growth, not to mention refining and improving our human capital in the workplace. That's about as good as a good intention can get. However, in the year 2000, student loans accounted for almost 3% of all consumer debt, but by 2012, that number had climbed to 10%. That's $1 trillion. $1,000 billion in debt owed by students by the youngest working Americans. Now, one of the unforeseen but completely foreseeable consequences of opening up and federally guaranteeing student loans, what a great intention, has been to place $1 trillion of guaranteed real money on the table for colleges and universities to feed upon. And that's why the cost per credit of a college education has far outstripped the rate of inflation. Colleges are charging more and more money for the same education because that new money is available and it's guaranteed. Now, presumably, we take out a student loan to help us get a job. But what the latest in-depth study shows, you don't have to take my word for it, they have math, for God's sake, is that relatively small increases in student loan debt in fact causes a relatively large destruction of new jobs, not the creation of them, as your good intentions would lead you to expect. What these concise and easy to understand mathematical symbols show us, based on the latest real world data, is that a student debt increase of one standard deviation, which in this case is about 4%, has a catastrophic impact on not just those students' personal economic future, but on the entire economy. These researchers have discovered that by raising the growth of student debt by one standard deviation from roughly 4% to roughly 8%, it kills dead 25% of new small business startups. Why? Well, because small businesses with 1 to 4 employees, which make up 99% of total businesses, 60% of private sector new jobs, and fully half of the total U.S. private sector economy, depend on personal credit in order to get started. A national increase in 4% of student loan debt takes off the table the available credit needed to start 25% of the total new small businesses in America. Even those students who didn't major in medieval Renaissance poetry, but rather something that they thought would help them in the real world of economic reality, end up owing so much money that they no longer are able to get the commercial loans they need to start their own small businesses once they graduate. The good intentions of getting an education in order to get a job has cost them the ability to get a job because credit once available to start a business is no longer available due to their outstanding debt load. Now, I said earlier that I think we have this causality arrow backwards when we say that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You see, it's not that our good intentions create the road to hell. It's that our good intentions blind us to the fact that we are doing real harm, not the good we intended. And this is why leftist progressivism fails not only on the path to heck, as with student loans, but on the road to actual hell. Government-controlled health care leads to rationed health care. Government-owned housing projects are petri dishes of crime and neglect. Government-funded EBT cards create entire generations of dependency and despair. And when you get to the end of it, you find that the so-called good intentions of a classless world of perfect income equality leads to secret police and gulags and punitive starvation and corruption and despair and inhumanity and the alcoholism needed to kill the guilt and fear of no less than 100 million murders by well-intentioned exterminators on the glorious socialist road to hell. All of these catastrophes, from student loans to the executions at secret police headquarters, are not caused by the good intentions of the left. They grow from the laws of unintended consequences and the irreparable fault line in human nature that the left refuses to accept. No, it's the good intentions of these so-called progressives that provides the internal fig leaf that allows them to perpetually look into their rosy glow of their noble hearts and nod out at the actual damage and the actual ruin and eventually the actual horror that these leftist policies, however well-intentioned, really inflict on real people in the real world.
And, of course, that fits in with our theme. And, you know, we've seen this throughout history, through different areas where, again, I'm not saying that there's a 100% answer, but certainly a socialist environment, which is what we have built so far due to our incumbents and due to our Federal Reserve and the way that things are operating, have made this a problem. And you heard Bill talk about the debt load. Do we not think that that will create another bubble down the road? You know, you have to remember that the unintended consequences, which we discuss here on the Bubba Show all the time, nobody wants to think about what can happen if, you know, and it's funny. Well, it's not funny. It's sad. But with my own children, you know, look, they're kids. You know, my kids are 20 and 21. And they're going to do things that I'm not going to like, right? We all know that, okay? But all you can do in those cases is you can hope your kids make the right decision, okay? And that is what I don't see right now, is I don't think we're making a lot of the right decisions, okay? And that, to me, you know, is a problem. You know, good people are going to get hurt. Good people are going to die. It happens. But, you know, if you are not going in and understanding what can happen if, I think that's a mistake. And I think that's a common mistake that many of us make in everyday life, is not thinking about what can happen with that decision that I'm making today. And to me, that creates a bigger problem down the road when you are not prepared for the possibilities of what can go wrong. Because as we know, whatever can go wrong usually does. So if we are prepared for what can go wrong, then we can take failure in stride and move forward. But if we try to hide from what can go wrong and thinking that it cannot happen to me or it cannot happen to us, I think you find that is a much bigger problem. I hope you enjoyed the presentation today. I certainly did. Again, I'd love to hear your comments, Bubba at thebubbashow.org, anytime, and I will respond to each and every one of you, as I always do. And I want to remind you that we are coming out, and it is out now, the Bubba Report, which is $99 a year with a minimum of 12 issues at least once a month, with writers Anthem Blanchard, The Badger, Bubba, Scott Chalady, Keith Bliss, Mike Brown, covering everything from economics to government to cryptocurrency. We cover it all, and we educate you on all of it. It's been a great show today. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Bubba Show. The Bubba Show. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. See you later.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.